How's your Friday going? Well, it is 5 o'clock, so I hope it's going well. It's got to be going well now that it's five. Double happy hour, triple happy hour if you count the fact that you're about to be listening to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD in Garden City, New York. I'm Tom Ryan and my lovely wife and co-host, Teddy Morales Ryan, here as well, as always.
I'm always by your side.
Boy, oh boy, ain't that the truth. And, well, of course, on Fridays, we call the show How Music Changed, which means we go really deep into specific topics, and this show is proof of that, because we've been covering the history of Pink Floyd and their career for 18 shows now. This is part 18. I'm going to call it survival, because we've gotten to a long point, and this is where things are, the band is broken up. You know, Roger Waters is in one place, and the three members are barely holding it together themselves because, in fact, the album that they put out, A Momentary Lapse of Reason, was essentially a David Gilmour solo album, as we discussed last week. So anyway, if you follow the band's history, it's really easy, though, to portray Roger Waters as the evil egotist who tore the band into shreds. And I'll admit that I feel that way at times. But as time does pass, that simplistic notion loses its gravity. As you know, as time, meaning decades, pass, it slowly becomes obvious that the creative nature of the band members, especially Roger, is what pulled them apart. It wasn't malicious so much as it was essential to continue with each personal need to retain creativity and to create art. The later years may not carry the same essential ingredients that attracted an entire planet to love and listen to their earlier music as a unit, but as time unfolded, it was really easy to recognize the intelligence, the artistry, and the vision that made Pink Floyd the wonder kind that it had been. So from here on out, I will admit that Pink Floyd's mojo has evaporated to a great extent, but their talent, their intensity, and the plain, simple beauty of their ambition as individuals and what's remaining of the band is enough to justify pretty much every step that they took after their split. So this show represents only the beginning of that part of the journey. We still have a ways to go, and I promise it will not disappoint. We pick up where we left off last week. We were playing tracks from A Momentary Lapse of Reason, and I pulled one of the tracks from The Delicate Sound of Thunder, which was the first Pink Floyd live album without Roger Waters. And I want to go from there again. I want to take from Delicate Sound of Thunder for a song that was written by David Gilmour. It's unusual because it's a political song. And David Gilmour did not write political songs. That was like more, that was 100% Roger's territory. But David Gilmour basically, I guess, as he says, it's about, quote, the political situations in the world. He says, we have these right-wing conservative governments that don't seem to care about many things other than looking after themselves. So that's what inspired him to want to write this song. And he writes it, and if you listen, you'll notice that it has sort of a Celtic feel to it, an Irish feel. It's like these complex rhythm changes. On the album, it was not Nick Mason who played drums. It was Jim Keltner. Because I think that he was feeling a little bit insecure, Nick, about his own abilities at this point in time. So it's Jim Keltner who played it in the studio. Live, though, it's the band. And that's the version that we're going to play here from The Delicate Sound of Thunder. Here is On the Turning Away.
Thank you. of the turning away from the pale and downtrodden and the words they say which we won't understand. Don't accept that what's happening is just a case of other suffering. Oh, you'll find that you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting its shroud over all we have known. Unaware how the ranks have grown, driven on by a heart of stone. We could find that we're all alone in the dream of the proud. On the wings of the night, speechless unite in a silent accord. Using words you will find the strange, mesmerized as they light the flame. Feel the new wind of change on the wings of the night. We'll be right back.
Bit of a live masterpiece, I think, there on the Turning Away from the Delicate Sound of Thunder album, the first live album that the Pink Floyd recorded without Roger Waters. Now we're going to move to a live album exclusively with Roger Waters. You know, at a point in his life, after The Wall came out and Roger went solo, he said that somebody came up to him and asked him if he would ever perform The Wall again on stage. And his quote was, I said, no, indoors, it makes no sense financially. It's too expensive. And as it's partially an attack on the inherently greedy nature of stadium rock shows, it would be wrong to do it in stadiums. And I said, well, I might do it outdoors if they ever take the wall down in Berlin. And then, so this entire album was recorded on a field that was part of no man's land when the Berlin Wall was standing. So when they ripped it down, there was this big field that they called no man's land, and that's what they set up to record this album, which is rather stunning. To play too much of this would be redundant, since we did play a great deal of the album itself, but we've got to touch on it. And let's do the opening track with band as the Scorpions supporting Roger Waters. Here's In the Flesh.
Just have to roll your way through this.
Imagine the intensity of this happening after the wall came down and this song just like that opening up the show. It must have been incredible. You could hear the audience on how crazy it is. Roger Waters tried really hard to bring in people like Peter Gabriel, Bruce Springsteen, and Eric Clapton, Rod Stewart, Joe Cocker. But two things happened. The date ended up changing, and the people who said that they could make it no longer could because of the change of the date. Other people were just unavailable. But regardless of that, he still did manage to get people like Cyndi Lauper, Sinead O'Connor, Joni Mitchell, if you can believe it, is on the album, Bryan Adams, Jerry Hall, Paul Carrack, and on this next track, quite obviously, Van Morrison singing with Roger Waters their version of Comfortably Numb.
Corner.
One thing you've got to say about Pink Floyd, whether it's a solo artist or the band itself, is even in the live performances, the construction and the production is astounding. It's just unbelievable. Listening to that version of Comfortably Numb is like enough to give you goosebumps. It's pretty amazing. There is yet another live album coming up by Roger Waters pretty soon, so we'll get to more of that later. I want to mention, though, that you are listening to WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York, and you're listening to How Music Changed. The show is here every Wednesday and Fridays, excuse me, between 5 and 6 p.m., with Heidi and I doing the hosting and all the stuff that we do. And, of course, we're in the midst of a Pink Floyd series here. And let's get on with it, because there's a lot that I want to cover here. The next, that was the first album that came out in the 90s, which was a very appropriate thing for The Wall live in Berlin to be the very first Pink Floyd-related album to be released. It was recorded, I mean, that show happened on July 21st, 1990, which is right at this point where I'm talking right now. That's almost exactly 26 years ago. Man, time flies. Scary. But Roger was the next one to follow up with another solo album. Of course, it's a theme album. every one of his albums is a theme album. And every single time he does a theme album, and I'm going to excerpt certain songs, I have no idea how to really explain the theme because they're usually so incredibly complex. In this case, the basic fundamental thing is that it's about an ape changing a television show by basically changing the channels and flipping and watching what's happening. But literally, it's an ape who is doing it. And it gives Roger a chance to pretty much jump from topic to topic. But of course, a lot of it is still very political and anti-war and, you know, basically the things that he believes in and he stands for. And the track I'm going to chose first from the album called Amused to Death, his third studio album, is this one entitled What God Wants.
I don't mind about the war. That's one of the things I like to watch. If it's a war going on, then I know if our side's winning, if our side's losing.
Fingered his pale blue Japanese guitar. The priest said, God wants goodness, God wants light, God wants mayhem, God wants clean fame. Don't look so afraid, I'm only joking. crack. God wants rainfall and God wants wet pigs. God wants voodoo, God wants shrines. God wants law, God wants organized crime. God wants crusade, God wants jihad. God wants good, God wants bad.
Tracks all blend together, so they get really, really drastic when they get cut off, when just things like that. That would have segued into the next track, which would have been called Perfect Sense Part 1 and Part 2. I've only got time for some, so I want to skip forward to a track called The Bravery of Being Out of Range. I think this is Roger again, basically talking about the Gulf War, maybe, or the same nonsense that was happening with between England and what was happening in South America. Basically, about how easy it is for certain political generals and such to be able to like risk other people's lives. It's the bravery of being out of range.
two more beers. Sir, turn off the TV sound. The war started on the ground. Just love those laser-guided bombs. They're really great for lighting rhymes. You hit the target and won the game from bars 3,000 miles away. 3,000 miles away, we'll play the game with bravery, being outranked. We zap and bang with the bravery, being outranked. We strafe the train with the bravery, being out of range. We gain terrain with the bravery, being out of range. We're playing the game with the bravery, being out of range.
It was a book that inspired Roger Waters to write Amused to Death. There was a writer called Neil Postman who wrote a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And that's what had given him a lot of his ideas for the inspiration. Most of it, like the ape changing the channels as part of like the recurring theme with all of these topics about war. Waters said that the ape was, quote, a symbol for anyone who's been sitting with his mouth open in front of the network and cable news for the last 10 years. In other words, you know, wake up, people. That's what he's trying to say. So I'm picked in a couple of songs. I have to admit, this is a rather complex album, and it, in a way, it deserves an entire show. But, of course, I really can't do that now that we're this far in, 18 already. So I'm going to play two songs back to back. There's a series here of songs called Late Home Tonight. There's part one and part two. I'm going to play part two, which is a relatively short song, and we'll segue that into, after Late Home Tonight, into a watching TV, which more or less captures the essence of what the theme of the song of the album is about.
Clear the satellite link, check the fax machine. Hold the lead story, boys, there's some great pictures coming in. Now the pilot's heartbeat slows, palms dry out. No questions, only orders. And the F-1 glides in, nose up through the cloud base, and the ground crew cheers as he puts down his landing gear. Hey boy, you're a hero. Take this cigar and back home. In Cleveland, all the papers and the local TV stations will be calling your mom. And the farmer's wife shoos the cat off the chair. She says, sit down, my dear, was the milking all right? Our American friends are late home tonight.
Oh, darling, you really must keep in touch. Only bears hibernate, you know.
We were watching TV. Watching TV. We were watching TV. Watching TV. Tiananmen Square, lost my baby there. My yellow rose and her bloodstained clothes. She was a short order pastry chef in a dim sun dive on the Yangtze Tideway. She had shiny hair, she was the daughter of an engineer. Won't you shed a tear for my yellow rose? My yellow rose and her bloodstained clothes. She had perfect breasts, she had high hopes. She had almond eyes, she had yellow thighs. She was a student of philosophy. Won't you grieve with me for my yellow rose? Shed a tear for her bloodstained clothes. She had shiny hair, she had perfect breasts. She had high hopes, she had almond eyes. She had yellow thighs, she was the daughter of an engineer. So get out your pistols, get out your stones, get out your knives, cut them to the bone. They are the lackeys of the grocer's machine. They built the dark satanic mills that Banyard Fetcher hell on earth. They bought the front row seats on Calvary. They are irrelevant to me. We were watching TV. Watching TV. We were watching TV. Watching TV. She wore a white bandana that said freedom now. She thought the Great Wall of China would come tumbling down. She was a student. Her father was an engineer. Won't you shed a tear for my yellow rose? My yellow rose and her bloodstained clothes. Her grandpa fought old Chiang Kai-shek, that no good, low down, dirty rat, who used to order his troops to fire on the women and children. Imagine that. Imagine that. And in the spring of 48, Mao Zedong got quite irate. And he kicked that old dictator Chiang out of the state of China. Chiang Kai-shek came down in Formosa. And they owned the island of Quemoy. Shells flying across the China Sea and they turned Formosa into a shoe factory called Taiwan. And she is different from Cro-Magnon Man. She's different from Anne Boleyn. She's different from the Rosenbergs and from the unknown Jew. She's different from the unknown Nicaraguan. Half superstar, half victim. She's a victor star, conceptual angel. She is different from the dodo, the
different from the Ken Kimono. She's different from the Aztec and from the Cherokee. She's everybody's sister. She's symbolic of a failure. She's the one in 15 million who can help us to be free. Because she died on TV.
It's really hard to explain. If you're not familiar with this album, it's one of those that I would highly recommend, actually, called Amused to Death, where Roger really can go really deep. I mean, on that song right there, you got quite the history lesson about the history of China and right on up to the Tiananmen Square massacre and how that was literally live on TV as we watched people being killed. He tells a rather astounding and very moving story about it while he bounces around with from topic to topic. Make you have no bones about the fact that he is very, very together with his political views. He's not like like following. He's quite together. I can't think of a better word. He knows exactly what it is that he's trying to do. If the person singing with him on that record, if you could believe it or not, that's Don Henley of the Eagles, who was harmonizing with him on Watching TV. The thing is, there was another song. There's a place on the album, which I found, I just want to mention this because I thought it was really interesting. There's a song called Too Much Rope, and he sings the line, "Each man has his price, Bob, and yours was pretty low." And I'm thinking to myself, oh, no. You know, is he once again picking on Bob Ezrin? And as it turns out, like indirectly, yes. What he was actually saying, he goes, he would sometimes rehearse vocal takes by singing using Bob Dylan's voice like that as a goof. So instead of saying each man has his price, my friends, he said each man has his price, you know, Bob, and yours was pretty low. And he was going to redo it because he meant it as a joke. But then the producer insisted that he leaves it on. And then Roger said, quote, "It was unintentional, but I'm happy that it's there for Bob Ezrin. I hope he appreciates it." He just won't leave that man alone. Oh, it's incredible. Well, we're going to have time for one more here. And we'll go back to Pink Floyd, where we started, the band. And we're going to cover their album, The Division Bell. With most of the songs that we'll be playing from it will be for next week. But I want to end this show with their song from that album called Great Day for Freedom, because it takes us exactly right back to where we were with Roger Waters live at the Wall. The band themselves were obviously very moved by what had happened, by that gesture. And they came up with this song to explain their own feelings. It didn't take a double album. In this case, with David Gilmour, he's a bit more succinct. So this is only a song that's maybe about 4.5 minutes long, but it's pretty much about the exact same thing, called A Great Day for Freedom. Thanks, folks. Hope you can join us for Part 19 next week. See you then.
On the day the wall came down, they threw the locks onto the ground. And with glasses high, we raised a cry. The freedom had arrived. On the day the wall came down, the ship of fools had finally run aground. Promises lit up the night like pale doves in flight. I dreamed. Now life devalues day by day. There's friends Now frontiers shift like desert sands, while nations wash their bloodied hands of loyalty, of history in shades of gray. I walk to the silver drum, the music plays, the morning sun streams. I turn and I look at you, and all my commitments are rescued, slip away, slip away. Thank you.